All right, welcome back to our Side Chat podcast. This is episode 4, interview 3, and we are interviewing Carol Taylor today. So I will let her introduce herself.
So I'm Carol Taylor, and I currently teach honors in AP chemistry at a high school here in New Orleans.
Wonderful. And how did you get to that position, and what's the most rewarding part of that job so far?
Oh, so where should I start in terms of where I got there? Do you want me to start with undergrad?
You can go as far back as you want, but yes.
So I studied neuroscience and public health at Tulane in my undergrad. And when I was finishing, I worked in a pharmacology lab at Tulane. And when I was finishing, I didn't really like my options after undergrad. So I think I was making like $11 an hour in undergrad in my lab. And when I graduated and I had my bachelor's degree, they're like, great, you can stay. This is awesome. We'll pay you $12 an hour. And so there was like no real change. And so I started applying for jobs, and I didn't really hear much. There wasn't anyone that was saying, I'm not hiring you, but there wasn't anyone that was saying they would be willing to hire me. And so I didn't really like my job prospects at that point. And so I decided I wanted to go to graduate school. And I decided I wanted to stay here in New Orleans. I felt like I didn't really get into the culture here until several years in. I found that I was in a bubble for a little while. And so I had two options. I could do my master's in neuroscience, which was taking just the classes I hadn't taken yet in undergrad, or I could do my master's in public health and I could change campuses and I could go downtown and there was so many more classes I could take. So I ended up doing my master's in epidemiology. And I took a molecular epidemiology class with a guy who I thought was pretty cool, and he talked a lot about his cancer research, and I got really intrigued, and I asked him, you know, how does one figure out if, you know, that's the type of research that they're interested in? Like, how did you, you know, get into cancer research, and, you know, how does one dabble in that? And he kind of laughed at me and said, you know, people don't dabble in it. You know, go get your PhD. And from there, you know, you can figure out what you want to study. And so I ended up working under him for 2 years at the Louisiana Cancer Research Center. And then we lost funding in our lab, which is fairly common here in New Orleans. This isn't really a research hub. I then moved into research in immunology, doing this immunology research. I realized I was really passionate about going into medicine. And so I started a program at UNO that was basically me just taking some graduate level classes so that I could apply to medical school, because they don't like it when you're out of school for too long. And at that point, I had been working in research for like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And so I went back to UNO. I took classes there. I had a really great experience. And when I was wrapping up, I got pregnant. Yikes, not planned. So I have kind of, you know, taken this very much so winding road to where I am now. But my schedule very much so now revolves around the fact that I have a small child, and he doesn't want anything to do with anyone but his mom. So it's very hard when he won't go to sleep with anybody else. And so I basically did lots of different jobs along the way. I've worked in lots of realms of research, but I think that right now working in education just works with my schedule being a mom. So that's kind of what got me into education and teaching. So here we are.
Back to those laboratory jobs in cancer research, aside from the pay not being sustainable long term.
Yeah.
What are other challenges with one, both working at those facilities, two, just getting your foot in the door or being able to work on that kind of research? And was the transition from undergrad to those labs smooth, or did it take a little bit of searching?
So I actually finished my master's in epidemiology before going into those jobs. So I don't know what it is like going with just a bachelor's degree. For me, I met a professor when I was in graduate school, and I kind of begged and pleaded with him to train me, and he didn't really want to, and he was very reluctant. So I worked under him for maybe 6 months without a paycheck. And I was like an unpaid intern, but I was learning so much that I loved the job and I didn't care. And, you know, everyone in my life at that time was like, you know, you have 3 degrees. What are you doing waiting tables? And I said, but I'm really passionate about what I'm doing and I'm learning so much. And they're like, but you're not getting paid to do it. So that was a challenge for me. I was in a position where I was the only one there without a PhD. And so I definitely had to prove myself. And, I think that the transition was not smooth at all, because I basically was there every day from 8 to 5. And then I waited tables in the evenings and on the weekends so that I could pay my rent. But after a few months, my professor had basically said that he had gotten more grant money and wanted to put me on payroll because he felt bad for how many hours I was putting in. So that was really nice, and it was really rewarding. And to be totally honest, I think that I would have stayed at that lab for longer had the grant money not run out and had the project not ended, because I was that invested in it. And I was actually thinking, you know, maybe at that point that a PhD in biochem would be worth it, because I was kind of figuring everything out on the job. And I thought that some coursework would really help me, because, you know, my graduate work was public health work, which is not biochem. And so I was actually considering, you know, going into a PhD program so that I could sustain that job long term. But I think that grant money here is hard to come by, especially long term. And so, you know, the project ended. And that professor actually didn't stay in town and ended up going up to Boston, going somewhere else, because he was struggling himself, you know, even after being in the research he was in for 30 years, he was struggling to get grant money. And so I don't necessarily think that, you know, you can have, and his PhD was from an Ivy League school and he had all these amazing publications. You can be the most qualified person for the job, but if you don't have grant money that is going to sustain your research, then you're not going to be able to do it. And so I actually think that I probably would have stayed there for longer, and that my track would have been different had things not abruptly ended there. But I really loved the work there. And when I basically figured out that there was like an ending date, I really wanted to stay in New Orleans. And that's kind of how I fell into clinical research. I think there's a lot more funding nationally for clinical research because you're getting funding from hospitals. So for me, the cancer research was a little bit antisocial. So I went to work every single day and I put in headphones and I worked from 8 to 5. And every Friday we had a like 2-hour progress meeting and everyone kind of got a turn. So every couple of weeks, I would do a presentation on all of the work that I had done, all of the data I had collected, and basically how that was going to add to, so we were like kind of all working on little pieces of the like bigger project. So specifically, we were looking at polymerase beta and its role in the rate of prostate cancer in African Americans versus Caucasians. And everybody kind of had a little piece of that. And so we'd talk on Fridays collectively, where each of us were. But to be totally honest, the job was very antisocial. And I didn't realize it because it was my first full-time job out of school. So I just kind of thought, that's research. You don't talk. You just kind of go into the job and you do the job. And it really wasn't until I got into education that I realized that I really like talking to people every day. And I think that I may have not figured that out had I not bounced around a bit.
And with talking to people, is it just better and easier to express your ideas? And then second question, with the whole research and education thing, just getting your master's and your bachelor's, which part called to you the most? Was it just the learning new information? Was it just neuroscience in general? Which part was really calling you to continue with your education and keep pushing?
Well, the truth is, at the end of my undergrad, I didn't really feel like I had a good grasp on anything. I felt like I had touched a little bit on some ideas, but I didn't really feel like I was qualified to do anything. I felt like I had a little bit of lab experience. I worked in a lab with mice, and I was like injecting them every day. So I had experience like holding mice down and like putting needles in them. But like, I didn't really feel like I, you know, had a very good understanding of any realm of biology. I didn't really feel like I had a good understanding of any realm of neuroscience. I didn't feel like I had a very good understanding of any realm of public health. I felt like I had touched on everything a little bit. And at the end, I was like, okay, well, is that it? So I think that it was actually a really natural progression for me to continue my education because, and truthfully, the reason that I chose to study neuroscience is because through most of my degree, I would raise my hand and the teacher would be like, why is she raising her hand? I'm in the middle of my lecture. What are you doing? And I would be like, and I would ask a question. And the teacher would already be annoyed that I was asking a question in the middle of the lecture, right? But I'd ask a question, and quite often the answer was, we don't know, so you should go and do the research and figure it out. And then I'd go to office hours and be like, you were talking about this topic today, and it was so cool, and it was so interesting, and what do we know about this, and what do we know about that? And most of the time, the answer was, we don't. And so that's what actually drew me into neuroscience, was the fact that there's so many unanswered questions, and all that you really get into at the bachelor's level are those unanswered questions. We don't really delve at all. And so I think it was pretty natural for me to continue. And to be honest, if I had my way and somebody would pay me to go to school right now, I would continue because I think that there's still a lot that I could learn in a classroom. And, you know, I think that a bachelor's degree is great. But I don't think that any bachelor's degree from any university really puts you into a position where you're feeling really confident about any given topic. And I think the question you have to ask yourself is, do you think that you would learn more in a classroom, or do you think that you would learn more in a job setting? And for me, I've always really enjoyed the classroom setting, and I've always really enjoyed sitting with a book, sitting with a journal. More so than I have doing any realm of research, because most of the research that I have done has been, okay, I'm going to teach you how to run a PCR. Okay, run a PCR every day for 6 months. I'm going to teach you how to do a Western blot. All right, I ran Western blots all the time at the cancer center. That's what I was doing all the time. And so it was just like the same things over and over and over again. And so I didn't feel like after I had learned the process, I didn't really feel like I was continuing to learn, beyond the analysis of the data. And I guess that is just dependent on the realm of research that you're in and what you can kind of take from that. But I think the big question is, do you feel like you would learn more in a classroom, or do you feel like you could learn more in a job setting? And I think that that ultimately can help you decide, should I continue, should I do a master's, should I continue and do a PhD, or should I, you know, go and try to go into a work setting where maybe that work setting is not going to teach me a whole lot, but maybe that work setting could help me in figuring out what I do want to study and what I am interested in and what maybe I should go to graduate school for. But I've had a lot of professors tell me that, like, you should just go to graduate school and go into a research lab and kind of figure it out from there. So I don't know.
Is it tempting to possibly go back in the future, or are you set on teaching for now?
I would love to go back. To be totally honest, I would rather be in school than working, but that's just me. I enjoy school. I enjoy being in class. I am still sitting and, you know, reading journals because I'm interested in what's going on, and I'm like not in school and I don't have like assignments to go read XYZ, but I'm just interested. And so that's just me as a person. I think there's a lot of people that after their bachelor's degree, they're like, I'd never go back to school. I don't love the classroom, you know, that's just never been me. So I don't know. I think that's just person by person. But yes, I would love to go back, and I plan on going back, once my kid's in school full time.
With the, teaching, especially going from chemistry to, neurochemistry or neurobiology to teaching chemistry, how was the transition, and how did you initially get into teaching and go about going through that job process?
Sure. So I did the cancer research. I worked in, when I left there, I worked in clinical research for a while. Again, there were funding issues. And I was venting about funding issues to folks that I didn't know what they did for a living. I had never asked them. And it just so happened that I was venting to the principal of a school. And I was telling him that, you know, the funding was running out in a couple of months, and I really wanted to stay in New Orleans, and I love New Orleans, but it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of job opportunity and research here. Labs seem to be shutting down all the time. People are fighting over grant money. How do I stay in New Orleans? And he was like, you know, I would hire you tomorrow. And I was like, really? To do what? And he happened to be the principal of the school. I happened to take the job because I really wanted to stay in New Orleans. But honestly, I didn't see it as a long-term thing. In terms of what I would teach at the high school level, I think that, so I have taught now every science, but I think that for me, the easiest thing to teach is the chemistry. And I think, actually, I would say chemistry and physics. And I think that that is primarily because I like to problem solve. And I think that that comes very naturally to me. And although most of my coursework was in biology, I feel like a lot of the learning of biology is independent work, in that it's language heavy. And if you don't understand the language, then you're not going to understand the processes. And when you're teaching high school kids and you're like throwing language at them, if they don't go home and study it, then they don't understand the words that are coming out of your mouth. Whereas if you know, give a high school kid a formula and you're like, all right, let's talk about Newton's second law, F equals MA. Can you plug into this? They're like, yeah, it's great. You know, they don't really have that, like, so much of a hard time with that. Also, I think that I have ultimately ended up in chemistry because I enjoy the experiments more than anything else. I think the lab work in chemistry is way more interesting than it is in biology or physics. And I don't know if that is because of, like, my experience with labs throughout the sciences, but I think I've always enjoyed the lab work in chemistry, and I think that high school kids really enjoy that. And I'm at a school where our blocks are 100 minutes, which is a really, really long time. And so there's never a day where I'm just, like, feeding them content or just problem solving the whole time. I mean, every once in a while, maybe, but usually it's, let's talk about a topic, and then let's go and do an experiment to better understand this topic. And I think that I kind of wish that more of my classes all along were that way. I think we've all sat in classes where we've been lectured to, and eventually we're like, oh, when is this over? And like my class is just not that way. And so I don't know, it definitely works for me. And it's something that I really enjoy, and my kids really love it. And I think I'm also really fortunate because I teach at a school where most of my kids are very ambitious and really want to learn the content. I have like 20-something kids in my AP section right now. And they are just loving it. And I'm really taken back by it because it's, you know, crazy COVID times where our schedule is flipped upside down, their lives are flipped upside down, but yet they really want to learn it. And so I think that my experience has also been really positive because of who I've been teaching.
Question. So both pre and post COVID, sure how the experiments have worked since then. What are the experiments that they're able to do during those 100-minute blocks that make them go wow, or just inspire them, or let you smile on
those? So my kids have all had the option, and I think that this is basically everywhere, they have the option to elect to stay at home. So about a third of my kids have decided that they are going to stay at home every day. The other third comes to school on Monday and Thursday. The other school comes to school on Tuesday and Friday. So we were fully virtual until, for a while. When did we go back? We went back, in October, mid-October. And so we have only been in person now for about a month or so. And I was quarantined for the last 2 weeks because one of my students tested positive. So I actually haven't been in person with them very often. When I was in person with them, when I first came back, I was so excited because I was like, oh, I can do experiments. This is great. We can stop doing these virtual labs that are awful, you know? And I got really excited about it. And then my administration was telling me all of the COVID precautions. So if you want to do any activity with any child, that individual child has to have all of their individual materials. Nothing can be shared. So if you are trying to give them a chemical, you have to like put it into individual containers for each kid. So when we first got back, we were in the reactions unit. And what I did was I just gave them like well plates, and I made small amount. I took these little like dropper bottles. And so they had like 25 of those in front of them. And like what they were doing in the reactions lab was they were just seeing like, they were predicting, you know, was a solid going to form, was a gas going to form? And then they were just kind of able to see it. And I had one student put the camera that was on the Zoom over his well plate and kind of walk the kids at home through it so they could see it. It's not ideal. It's not a great year. I've been, doing lots of virtual labs. There's lots of virtual lab platforms that are kind of getting hot right now because of COVID. And so I think a lot of people have been contributing, and there's been a lot of pressure on them to kind of come up with something better. I think up until this year, virtual labs have been garbage. And now there's a lot of really strong scientists. I think there's a lot of AP teachers at the high school level and college professors that have teamed up to say, what do we expect kids to get at the high school level? What do we want them to know by the time they're coming into college? And they've teamed up to come up with these virtual labs to basically make it as real as possible. So there's been some really great virtual labs that I've done. I've been using a program called Pivot, but then there's others that are not so great. So I think that if there's anything that kids are not getting right now because of COVID, it's lab experience. And I'm kind of worried about what that's going to mean for kids that go into the STEM direction in the future, but we'll see. You know, I think a lot of kids are questioning, you know, should I use my AP credits or should I not? And what they're all kind of sitting and waiting on is, well, is the university going to allow me to take my labs and do my labs? And if they are, maybe I shouldn't take my AP credits so that I can get that lab experience. So I think a lot of decisions are resting on that lab experience.
Oh, tricky, tricky, tricky. thank you for that. And thank you for just the insights into your job and maybe what each day looks like. Now, another thing I want to ask you is, what do you do outside of science? Because it is important to kind of maintain a sense of self and just maintain hobbies on the outside. Do you have any hobbies, or is it just more learning?
So I've always been very into exercise. So when I actually got pregnant, I was training for a triathlon, and that was what was consuming all of my free time, because it was like a longer one. I had to, you know, go get out on my bike and do, you know, 100-mile bike rides. So that was what was consuming all of my free time. And now most of my free time is my son, because I'm at work every day. Well, when I'm at work and not at home, I'm at work every day from like 7 to 4-ish. And so, and my son goes to sleep at like 8. And so I get from 4 to 8 with him, if I'm with him that entire time. So I don't really get a whole lot of time with him. So that is where I am spending my free time right now. I'll be honest though, Fatica, before I had a child, that free time was usually in the library, because I was always working when I was in school. So it'd be like job, class, study. And I think you're right. I think you do have to find something outside of that, that you find pleasure in. I think something that's kept me in New Orleans is always trying to go and see live music. That's always been stress relieving to me. And again, that's not happening because of COVID. I think that a lot has changed in the last year. But yeah, I would say, you know, going and listening to music, spending time with my son. I still try to fit in exercise, keyword being try.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely hard with the live music venues and just musicians that you see. Do you prefer local artists, or do you like more well-known names? Just, I guess, when you...
I definitely prefer people local. I went to Frenchman last weekend just to see what the scene was like. And I actually loved it, because the music was great. And on either end of Frenchman, there were performers that were like playing on the balcony, and there were like not a lot of people there. And it was actually really nice. It felt like a private show. but yeah, I definitely prefer local. I think, you know, living in New Orleans, it's hard to not embrace the music scene because it's so unique.
Sure. And then just one more question about the triathlons. How do you train for that? And how do you go about doing your first triathlon? What marks that this is it? This is the day.
I think that the swimming is probably the most challenging, because most of us don't have Olympic-sized lap pools to swim in. And living in Louisiana, swimming in the Pontchartrain, you have to be really careful. And most triathlons are swimming in open water. So I think the hardest part is the swimming, but there's like a bunch of groups that get together and they jump in the Pontchartrain and go swimming. And I used to join them. I was training in a lap pool for a while, and then I went out and did a triathlon and was like, the lap pool is nothing like the open water that is dragging me under. So I don't know. I mean, you have to find somewhere to swim. And then, The bike and run, similarly, you know, the roads in New Orleans are terrible. You got to find where are you going to go bike that you're going to get in a long path. So I would drive to the North Shore and get on the trace over there, because it's like the longest, nicest path here. But I think it's definitely difficult, depending on where you live and what's around you, to get that in. I mean, you can run anywhere, but you can't bike and swim anywhere. So I guess you kind of start by figuring out, do you have the ability to bike and swim with where you live? And if you don't, are you willing to join a club that has a pool, or are you willing to jump in the poncha train? Or are you willing to take a ride to get a nice smooth bike ride so you don't get hit by a car? You know, I think that depending on where you live, you just kind of have to be willing to make the sacrifices to get in the training.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That was our episode for today with Carol Taylor again. Thank you so much for being a guest. Okay, so we're just adding another segment in because I didn't realize how urgent some of the work Carol does is. So you worked with blood samples, human blood samples from organ transplant donors. So maybe give a quick
look. Yeah, so I was just saying to Fatica that I think that in terms of trying to find work, that it may be easier, especially with only a bachelor's degree or maybe even a master's, that it may be easier to find more work in clinical research, but oftentimes that comes with sacrifices. And in my job, I basically was given a pager, and if an organ donor at the hospital died, my pager would go off, I'd go to the hospital, go pick up the blood, and I would go to the lab at 3 o'clock in the morning. And this was all very time sensitive. And for me at this time, it was very difficult to be so focused at 3 o'clock in the morning on something where it was like, if I messed up and I made a mistake along the way, that someone's organs could go to waste. And like that for me was a lot of pressure in the middle of the night. And like having like time sensitive experiments is fairly common in clinical research. And that was a major difference for me, feeling that pressure of time. When I worked in cancer research, if I ran something and it didn't run the first time, I just ran it the next day. It really wasn't a big deal. It was a big deal in terms of the cost of the materials to run it again, but you know, you want to run so many trials so you have so much data. But in the clinical realm, that really wasn't an option. And so like for me, I had a 5-hour window to complete the work that I was doing, and it took about 3.5 hours. And so if I made a mistake along the way, then there were major repercussions to that. And I think that, you know, you kind of have to sit and consider, you know, what are the sacrifices that you're going to have to make going into the realm of research that you want to do? Are you okay being attached to a pager where you're on call in the middle of the night? Are you okay being told that you have to stay in a certain mile radius of the hospital at all times? Are you okay being told that you have to live in a certain radius of the hospital? You know, some people are not willing to make those sacrifices, but I think that, you know, sometimes the job comes with that. And I feel like that all of those factors have to be considered before you say, this is the type of research I really want to do.
All right, thank you so much for that tidbit.